I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. We are celebrating 20 years in business and just entering our seventh year of doing open line programs. You can also find archives of our past topics for open line on our publication events tab on our homepage. Plus, our new book, Cracking the Business Code, is available on Amazon, or you can click on the book icon on our homepage. Our topic today is how employers create successful incentive plans. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. We'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, and we're going to jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, bringing effective insight to your organization. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to raise the hiring bar and assist companies with a variety of services, including interpersonal coaching, executive onboarding for success, leadership training, operational productivity improvement, and exploring global options for expanding your business. In fact, we just opened an office in Taiwan, so if you have an operation in Asia and would like to get your leadership coaching for your folks over there or providing them ideas of how to interact with a U.S. company, just let us know. Our Keeping on Track open line series is in response to a number of calls we always get from many of our clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various business issues that organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen, you'll see an area that you can send questions or ideas during our discussion. We'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. At the conclusion of our program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guest. So during our program, you may want to write down two or three questions to either send in during our program or ask once we open the line up today. Our special guest is a wonderful friend, business colleague, Mei-Long Ding, president of Personnel Systems Associates. She will share with us how employers create successful incentive plans. Mei-Long has been a successful consultant for over 22 years in the areas of employee compensation and performance management. Her client list is a who's who of public and private organizations, including Berta Aerospace, AST Research, Wells Fargo Bank, Pacific Care Health Systems, many mid-cap companies across the United States and multinationals at all different levels and sizes. She also has an expanding practice in the area of expert witness testimony in legal cases, discrimination, wrongful termination, and economic damage analysis. Mei-Long teaches compensation for the World at Work certification program and is taught for UCI, for those of you out of the area, that's University of California in Irvine, Cal State Long Beach, and Chapman University. She is the author of articles published in the Journal of Compensation and Benefits, the Personnel News, Personnel, and the Chapman University Economic Review. She is also the author of Survey Sources, a directory of over 1,500 U.S. and international employee pay and benefits surveys. I feel privileged to have Mei-Long with us today and to share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of today's program. The topic will be what it takes to be an employer of choice, both domestically and globally. We're going to have a panel discussion of four experts. You'll want to attend that. Mei-Long, welcome to OpenLine. Thank you for being our guest today.
Thank you. I'm really pleased to have been asked to assist in providing this presentation to your group. And I think that this is an area that, in terms of designing incentive plans, an area that more and more companies are interested in because it's one of the best ways to leverage your payroll dollars in terms of making sure that you're getting a return on investment of your payroll dollars. Particularly, I think, smaller employers and privately owned employers are very prone to just use what we'll call discretionary bonus plans. I call those the Christmas gift program. Even though they call them bonuses, they're not based on any predetermined objectives that are communicated to employees, and the amounts are unknown and, you know, subject to the absolute discretion of the owner. That is what I find most commonly in smaller and even mid-sized privately held companies. And this is a shame because it's kind of throwing away the dollars. You know, the employees say to themselves, wow, it's really great when they get it. They're not sure why they got it. The employer is fearful that if they give a significant amount, that it will become an expectation. And so they're afraid to give too much. They fear giving different amounts to one employee versus another because they have no easy way to explain those differences. And so it just becomes I'll call it the Christmas gift program. And those can become very expensive Christmas gifts. I know some employers can give the equivalent of a month's pay, which is in my mind just a poor use of their payroll dollars. So what we're going to talk about today is the best way.
Some of the folks are having difficulty hearing from a volume standpoint. I'm hearing you just fine, but maybe you can speak a little louder.
Let me pick up my receiver instead of using the speakerphone.
Okay.
How is that? Is that better?
One more time. Testing.
Is that better?
Actually, the other was a little better, I think.
The other was better?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Is this better?
That's a little better. Yeah, maybe put the mic a little closer if possible.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
So let's jump into how to design a great incentive program that's really effective. Here's some interesting statistics. This is from a survey conducted by Aon, which is one of the big international pay and benefits consulting firms. And they interviewed around 500 employees across America in many different industries, asking them about their opinions about pay and its effectiveness. And what they found was that 89% think that companies would perform better if employees were given meaningful incentives. But only 13% believe that they would benefit from producing more effectively themselves. So we are missing out if we do not provide meaningful incentives. So there's another wonderful survey. The survey is called What Makes the Most Admired Companies Great? This survey was conducted by The Hay Company, another large international pay and benefits consulting firm. And it's a survey that from which I really like their 2008 version. They have done other follow-ups since then, but they've changed the nature of the questions over time, and so some of the best questions relative to incentive design were posed in the 2008 survey, which is why I refer back to that one. So what was that survey? It is a survey of management practices that differentiate the best managed companies from the rest. So first they had to identify the 10 most admired companies in the Fortune 1000, and how they did that was by surveying hundreds of executives, senior executives, and board members in the Fortune 1000 and asking them to name which companies they most admired as to how they were being managed. And so the resulting group was Apple, GE, Toyota, Berkshire Hathaway, Procter & Gamble, FedEx, Johnson & Johnson, Target, BMW, Microsoft, Starbucks, Google, and Goldman Sachs. And in this group, total shareholder return was twice as great as others. So what they did was they then surveyed the Fortune 1000, hundreds of them, and they compared the answers of the top 10 that were named here to the rest to see how they varied in the way they managed people. Okay. And so what I've done is I've picked some of the questionnaire responses that deal specifically with performance management and incentive plan design. So, what did we find that the most admired companies do that helps them to drive higher performance in their companies? First of all, they were more likely to have performance measures which are clear and understandable, challenging, realistic, and achievable. Okay, now, those are really hard things to achieve. I mean, when I talk to my clients, I say, this is what we're trying to do. But you know what? If you haven't really focused on this issue of measuring performance, then it's going to take you several years, maybe 3 or 4 years, to really get good at it, because it's a skill. It's a skill that every manager has to have. So we have to train all your managers how to do this. And so this is really difficult, but it is what the best companies are able to do. Next is performance measures must focus on the most important things that drive the business. That is growth, profitability, operational excellence, customer loyalty. And here I say that the top 10 had scores which were twice as high as other companies on the customer loyalty performance measurement. In other words, they were twice as likely to use customer loyalty as an important measure of performance. Okay. Building human capital, meaning how we manage our people, how we develop our people. Okay. And they were two times as likely to measure effectiveness of management in building human capital. Next is they balanced individual, team, and corporate measures. And they were two times as likely to use a combination of those measures because they are all important. Okay. Too often I see companies use profit sharing in lieu of a true incentive plan. And so profit sharing is good from the point of view of that everyone understands that the rewards are tied to driving profitability of the company. And that in my mind, it should always be the number one driver of incentive plans. However, you're really missing out if you're not also measuring team effectiveness, or we'll call it department effectiveness, and individual effectiveness. And as you drill down from corporate to team to individual, measurement becomes more difficult because we're trying to measure many more types of responsibilities and variances. And so there's a lot of effort to drive it down to the individual level.
Milan, we have two questions that have come in, and apparently I was the one with the volume issue, not you. So two questions, and if you're going to address these later on, just say we'll get to them. Otherwise, you can address them now. The first one is, how do you develop performance measures, objectives that are challenging, realistic, and achievable? And the second question is, should we include competencies and skill development in the incentive plan?
Okay, so first, challenging, realistic, and achievable. Okay, so There's several things to look at. One is industry-wide benchmarking. Okay, what is the industry standard? And if so, if we're talking about corporate measures, you should be able to get industry benchmark data. Some industries it's a lot easier than others. No question about it. You know, you have to put out a big search, and I would start with the industry associations to see what's being done. So that's the best. Next is you also need to look at your company history. So what I would suggest is that you, before you set your goal, you do some baseline measurement so you know where you're starting from. Because if you ask for too big an improvement, then it becomes not achievable. And so one of the things I like to say is that the average employee should believe that the objectives that they must achieve have, with effort, a 70% probability of being met. Okay, that's what I consider challenging, realistic, and achievable, a 70% chance, right? When it starts to approach 50%, then I start to think, as an employee, I start to think, wow, I could really beat myself up and maybe I'll get, you know, very little. And so do I even want to try? And if it falls below 50%, then you're definitely in trouble as to the motivational value of your incentive plan. The next thing I would do is I would involve those who are responsible for achievement in the development of the performance measures. So it's a top-down approach. So what I would say here is that the CEO needs to meet with the executive team, and together they need to develop the corporate objectives as well as each department head's, each functional area's objectives. And then those department heads should sit down with their teams. The VPs will sit down with their directors and managers and put together more specific objectives. And then the next layer down, first-line supervisors can meet with individual contributors. One of the things that also ideally should be done is when you have multiple incumbent jobs, that you have common goals that are set for all employees in those multiple incumbent jobs. Now, as to competency and skill, it is less often included in a broad-based incentive plan, but there is a role for it. So a lot of times what we have is a separate incentive plan specifically for jobs where you have a important strategic initiative to develop competencies and skills in that job area. That is a good use of competency and skill incentives. One of the difficulties with competency and skill incentives is that you have to provide the training and the on-the-job work opportunities to develop those competencies and skills. And there may be areas where that's just not something that the company wants to focus their resources on. And you also don't want to have to pay for skills that you don't need, or competencies that you don't need. So, I mean, beware of what you ask for because you're going to get it, right? Beware of providing rewards for something and then not giving people a chance to really work at getting those rewards. So you have to be cautious, but there is definitely a role for it.
Thank you very much. Okay, perfect.
Okay. Um, And the last thing here is a strong linkage between the reward program and corporate performance. So like I said before, I think corporate profitability should be the number one driver of the incentive plan. And typically when I design an incentive plan, the number one, like it's formula driven, first of all. And usually the number one driver in that formula, the greatest weight is given to corporate profitability. And usually as a protection to the owners and the shareholders, there is a minimum level of profitability that must be achieved before the plan starts to pay out. Nevertheless, you also have to pay attention to the other key areas such as operational excellence, customer loyalty, and human capital development. Okay, here are some additional findings. The most admired companies have managers that are effective in reviewing and assessing employee performance. So, as I said, you know, developing skill in this area takes time. So, first of all, you need to have a management training program that provides significant training for managers in how to develop performance objectives, how to measure performance, and give feedback. Also, you need to have a system in place that provides rewards and punishments to managers who follow through versus those who don't. So one of the things that a lot of companies struggle with is that some managers have a hard time getting the performance appraisals done on time. And one of the recommendations I make is that those managers do not get their salary increases until all their performance appraisals are done. I also recommend that you provide some coaching resources. And I think this starts at the top with the senior executive team. Like, I recommend that all senior executives have available to them a personal coach who can help them with setting goals, providing feedback, and dealing with the people management issues. I think that it really leads to much better management. And if a senior manager or VP can't model the right behaviors for the directors and middle managers, then you're less likely to get those directors and middle managers to follow through with their own performance measurement, goal setting, and feedback for their employees.
Ilan, we just had a couple questions come in. The first one is around companies that are getting away from annual reviews and doing more quarterly discussions to meet the annual. And the second one is, what is HR's role in coaching leadership?
I really like quarterly discussions. I think that their managers should be encouraged to have actually a monthly discussion informally with their direct reports on how they're doing. But quarterly formal is really nice. And what I've seen is that for a company that's used to annual, going from annual to quarterly is a really big ask in terms of time availability. So it's probably more doable to go first to semi-annual and do that for a couple of years and then go from semi-annual to quarterly as far as formal reporting goes, because it is very time-consuming to do a good job. What was the other question again? I'm sorry.
HR's role.
One of the things I've found is that companies have really downsized their HR departments. And if HR has sufficient staffing to coach executives on performance appraisal, I think that is really great. Unfortunately, probably the minimum that should happen typically does not, which to me, the minimum for HR's role is to review performance appraisals to make sure that there's nothing illegal being done, okay, or nothing that could be interpreted as being illegal in terms of being discriminatory. I think it'd be great if HR could have a role in coaching executives, particularly at the senior executive level. I think it would be great if they could review every performance appraisal that goes through the system and be able to give feedback to each manager on problem areas that they see. I think that's a fantastic use of HR resources. However, I'm also aware that most HR departments just don't have the staffing to be able to do that. So the alternative is to bring in some outside coaching or to have some group coaching. I think group coaching sessions could be really good. Like, I think it's really awesome to offer as a opportunity for all managers that they could attend some group sessions on developing performance measures and work with each other on them as under the facilitation of an HR or training manager or an external consultant. And that's maybe a way to sort of get at giving more assistance in a more cost-effective way.
I see
a question. How can values be used to strengthen performance and development process? I think that values are so important. I think they should be at the forefront of looking at your performance measures in terms of explaining why we're using certain performance measures and how they relate to the values of the company. I think values are really important, whether that means values about teamwork. You know, if you value teamwork, then you ought to be using team-based performance measures. If you value customer service, then you should have customer service performance measures. If you value risk-taking, then, you know, you shouldn't be too harsh if people swing for the fences and miss. So values do play a really important role, and you need to think about how your measures relate to the values of the company. Okay, I see questions, I see comments about volume.
No, we're good.
I'm going to try again on the phone and pick up the phone.
Oh, we're good. Another question on this slide. How do we know if managers are effective in reviewing and assessing performance? And the second question is, how do you achieve significant variation in total remuneration based on performance?
Okay. All right. So how do you achieve significant variation in remuneration? So basically, you want to have formulas that drive that variation, okay? And so, to me, your top people should get two times what the average person gets, two times. So that's your top 10% to get two times what the middle 30% are getting. That's to me, that's exciting. You want people to say it's worth it to be shooting for the top. It's worth it. It's worth my time. It's worth my effort. So you want it to be big. And in order for it to be big, it's basically you want it to be formula-driven. Other question was? What was the other question?
Second one was, how do you achieve significant variation in total remuneration based on performance?
Okay, that's the one I just answered. What was the one before that?
How do you know if managers are effective in reviewing and assessing performance?
So what I recommend is that you have employee-wide surveys to ask the question. That's the best way to know. And that's what we've done for some of our clients. So you ask employees, you know, are the most important parts of your job being measured? You know, do you feel that your manager is aware of your effectiveness? Do you receive feedback on a, you know, you can fill in the blank, on a monthly basis on how you're doing on your most important measures? You know, so you ask them the question, and then you know. That's
perfect. Simple, easy, and to the point.
Okay. All right. So we were on the second bullet point, strong linkage between rewards and individual performance. Pay lower salaries for most jobs, but use bigger bonuses. So that, you know, that's really interesting. In companies where they have a culture of lower salaries and bigger bonuses, they can provide total rewards that are potentially superior, particularly for the best performers, right? Because some of the money that was going to go into salaries are now going to bonuses. That leads to greater variability in the total rewards of the best performers versus the average performers. Okay, what else? Significant variation in total remuneration of superior versus average. Regularly reinforce total rewards philosophy in communications. So that's also really important. When most companies are going in this direction, it's a change in culture for them. So they need to communicate regularly with employees and with management about what they're trying to achieve. Your managers have to understand why you're doing this incentive plan. What is the purpose? And they have to understand how it works, and they have to be comfortable with explaining it.
So it all comes down to communication. And two more questions before we go to this slide.
Sure.
First one is, we use a year-after-year bonus based on revenue over the previous same month a year earlier. Should we tie an expense factor also into it?
Yeah, so so one of the things I would say is that I very rarely suggest a revenue-based incentive plan, because revenue without profits is going to make the company go under. So profits are much more important than revenue. So profits are revenue minus expenses. So absolutely you need to include expenses.
Okay.
Next one, small business owner that is a manager and team incentive. Where does that variation increase live when you have 5 to 10 staff? Okay, I'm not understanding the question.
Let's do this. When we open the lineup, the person that submitted that, we can talk about that later on.
Okay.
Let's go to the next slide.
Okay. All right, so this is kind of the summary, Okay, the summary, here's the key things that you should be taking away. First of all, we want salaries that are competitive or maybe even a little below. So one of the things I always start with when I'm designing an incentive plan for a company is I say we need to do a market analysis to see where you stand on your salaries. Next is goal setting. We need a top-down approach. The CEO meets with his executives. The executives meet with their managers. The managers meet with their subordinates to set goals together. The goal setting needs to be done at the beginning of the performance measurement period. That can be a real challenge because a lot of companies just, you know, operations get in the way. So anyway, early is good. Next is we need to have measures that are as much as possible objective or observable, balanced between company, group, and individual. And the last thing I would say that I didn't mention before is you can't have too many because it dilutes the value of any one individual goal. So let's say that you have an employee that's going to get they have a $50,000 salary and they have a $5,000 annual bonus opportunity. Okay. So if you have five goals, then and you equally divided it, which you may not. You may have it weighted differently, but let's say you have it equally divided. Each one can be worth $1,000. If you have 10 goals, each one's only worth $500. Okay. If you have, 20, then oh my God, now they're worth very little. So you really want to use your incentive plan to focus the individual on the most important things. So not too many. In an ideal world, five would be great, maybe as many as 10, but certainly not more than 10. And a lot depends on how many dollars you have to work with. Remember, you're slicing the pie into thinner and thinner pieces, and at a certain point, it just isn't worth it anymore for them to go after that goal. So, all right, performance measurement. Frequency is really important. I recommend more frequent is better. If you have your most important measurements coming out every week, wow, that's powerful. If the person knows every week how they're doing on their most important performance measures, that's very powerful. If they know monthly, that's still great. If they know quarterly, that's pretty good, but not great. If they know annually, you've lost the war, okay? Because a person can only correct their performance or steer closer to the goal when they know where they stand. So by providing frequent performance measurement and performance feedback, we're able to help them get on course and steer towards the goal. And that's another area that companies have to gear up for. And it's another reason why you have to start with a limited number of performance measures, because measuring is a big effort. And measuring regularly is a big effort. So you got to focus on the most important stuff, and you can add to it over time. I mean, you know, once you've done the most important goals, and you can add others over time. Okay, and communication, talking about your values, your total reward strategy, how people are doing in regards to their performance objectives, how they're doing relative to the payout of the incentive plan is good. In regards to incentive pay, one of the questions that hasn't been asked but is important is the frequency of payment of the incentive plan. So, if you look at sales incentive plans, if you're looking at a commission program, for instance, that pays out every month, right? And it can be very powerful to pay out monthly if performance can be measured monthly. So that's a key. Can you measure performance monthly? It's probably, in most jobs, too much to ask. I like quarterly payouts, and you know, annual payouts, of course, are most common. You know, I'm going to say 80% of incentive plans, 90% of incentive plans are annual payout. But if you can do quarterly, that's great. Monthly, not only is it hard to do, but again, you're slicing the pie pretty thin. And so, for instance, if you have an incentive plan in which you're involving lower paid employees, it just might be slicing it too thin. Okay, prefer anniversary date or focal point review. Okay, so companies who like anniversary usually switch to focal and eventually, and focal point companies usually eventually switch to anniversary because there's no perfect answer. we'll talk about what I think works reasonably well, which is a focal point review that's divided into sort of exempt and non-exempt employees. So you have exempt employees done maybe 3 months apart from the non-exempt. So that kind of divides it into two groups. The reason why I like having these common review dates as opposed to anniversary dates is that managers, it's easier for them to plan it into their schedule, and they know who they have to do. They know they do them all at one time. Versus doing it on anniversary, it's a lot more difficult for them to remember who's coming up next, and more difficult for them to plan the performance planning and review feedback sessions into their schedules. So I like using common dates, but I also realize that it can be potentially disruptive to the business to try to do everyone at one time. So it's tough.
But also, if there's a good scorecard system, I would think that would make it easier, but also there's no surprises along the way. Is that true?
Yes. Also, another thing is that when you do them all at once, it helps you to make comparisons between employees in the same job. Because let's face it, you know, performance is somewhat relative, and so when you're considering everyone at once, it's helpful to bring fairness and equity to the appraisal process.
Milo, we have one more question before. I know you're going to share a case study in just a minute.
Mm-hmm.
What if you're going to pick five key performance measurements? What would those five be?
Well, you know, we've actually kind of already stated them, right? So, growth, profitability, operational excellence, customer satisfaction or customer loyalty, and building employees. So, what does that mean for each executive? It means something slightly different for each executive. But those are the areas. I mean, growth and profitability, those are definitely sort of corporate measures. Operational excellence is going to be based on each department. So each department is going to have to determine what is my key measure of operational excellence or key measures. And you know, one of the things that I want to recommend, by the way, because I know this is such a hard area, is there's two books that are the cheater's shortcut to performance measures. One is a book called How to Measure Managerial Performance by Richard Sloma, Sloma. And it's filled with performance measures for each functional area within the company.
Why don't you repeat the title and the author one more time?
How to Measure Managerial Performance by Richard Sloma. This is an old book. It's been around forever. Let's see. The last one I have is copyright 1980, but I know it's still in print in paperback form. So if you look for it, you can find it probably, you know, on Amazon. And the second book that I really recommend is one called Performance Measurement Examples. And that's by an author called Jack Zigon, Z-I-G-O-N. And it is a self-published work, so you need to go to the internet to order it. The internet address is www.zigonperf.com. And that gives you example performance measures by job title for hundreds of job titles. Okay, so again, it's a starting point. It's not that you would use it exactly, but you know, it's probably going to give you 50 to 70% of what you need for any particular job. So it's very helpful.
That's terrific. So let's go into the case study you'd like
okay.
to share.
All right. So this is an actual company that I developed, and a company-wide employee incentive plan for them. It's a business services organization, and the owner's objective was to grow the company quickly for a profitable sale. So he wanted to sell his company. And, you know, the company had probably been around for about 5-6 years, something like that. He was in the marketing services area, so they sold marketing services to other companies to market their products. So it's product marketing. He wanted all his employees to be eligible. We funded it with 4 to 10% of earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. So that's what EBITDA means, above a minimum threshold. So he had to be a little bit profitable in order to start to fund. But once they hit the minimum, they would give 4 to 10%. 10% would be if they significantly exceeded their goals, right? 4% at somewhat below their goals, but still good. And they had pretty ambitious goals. So it was on a sliding scale. Distribution of the funds were based on EBITDA performance, gross margin percent. Okay, so gross margin is revenue minus the cost of providing the goods and services, right? But it's before corporate overhead, before sales expense, before administrative expenses. So that encourages the operations groups to manage their expenses. Customer satisfaction ratings. Project effectiveness. So all their work was project-oriented. Every client would engage them for a specific marketing project. And at the beginning of the project, everyone knew what their budget was, what their objectives were, what were the key steps that had to be executed, and there would be a customer satisfaction rating at the end. And so every project was rated, okay, and then the individual's performance appraisal. We could look at more global aspects of that employee's performance. So that's sort of the individual. So we got the team. We've got the team goal, which is project effectiveness. We've got the individual goals, which are performance appraisal, and we've got the corporate goals, which are EBITDA, gross margin percent, and customer satisfaction ratings. I guess you could also say the customer satisfaction ratings are team goals as well as corporate goals. Okay. And They had aggressive payouts that were linked to aggressive profit growth. So what we looked at is we looked at what were the competitive salary and incentive for each job title. And we made sure that on a total compensation basis, if they hit these aggressive goals, that their pay would be significantly above average for their job title. The goal was 67% growth in profits. That's, you know, EBITDA is essentially profits. So we wanted 67% growth in profits. That's huge, right? And we tied them to target bonus of between 7% for the lowest paid hourly worker to 45% for the vice presidents. Okay. And this is a small company. So, you know, in a small company, vice president bonuses are usually around 25% or 30%. And hourly worker bonuses, when they're eligible, and most companies don't make hourly workers eligible, but when they're eligible, normally what you see is a 5% bonus. So these are significantly above typical market bonuses. But we're also asking for incredible growth. The return on investment to the owner for this bonus plan was 600%. So they achieved their goals. For every dollar he paid out in this incentive plan, he made $6, okay, for the company. So that's an awesome return on investment. The employees were ecstatic because they had formerly only received modest discretionary bonuses, I mean very modest discretionary bonuses. And now they're looking at four, five, six times the opportunity that they had before to make bonuses. So they were awesomely excited. And the outcome was that they hit their goals and the company got sold. So the owner was like really happy. So that one of the things I really have to credit them for, and I have to credit my most successful clients for, is being very attuned to the performance measures that drive their company success and being very willing to measure and report regularly on those measurements. So they did a really good job at that. And they paid out on a quarterly basis. They started first semi-annual and then they went to quarterly. So that was the way they did. And they reported, you know, at the end of every project they would have a report on how people were doing. So they knew where they stood. All right, so that is my presentation.
Phenomenal. Mm-hmm. We're going to open up the line in just a minute. I wanted to share two things. Mm-hmm. First of all, a client of ours, probably 70 to 100 employees or so, they had their annual gathering, and the CEO announced that they were going to go to quarterly reviews. He got a standing ovation, and the clapping and cheering was so loud, it was deafening, he said.
Ah, that's wonderful.
And they have a really good scorecard system. So people like to have the incentive, if it's measured appropriately and respectfully, and there's appropriate goals set out. I was reading a funny story this morning from Charles Schwab. He owned a mill, apparently, many years ago. And one of the shifts, they didn't do the right number of turns. So I guess a turn was low at 6. So he was talking to the manager, and he said, give me some chalk. So when the shift changed, Charles Schwab wrote on the he put the chalk and put the number 7. And people wondered, what does that number mean? And they realized that the shift before only met 6. So not only did the next shift meet 7, they went to 8. They crossed that out and put what they did, so the next shift took it up to 10. This is all on chalk many years ago. So by having the proper competitive goals and objectives set out, it can be an amazing experience. Again, in just a minute, we're going to turn the recording feature off. We're going to open up the line so you guys can ask questions directly of Malone. Malone, could you push the slide one slide further?
One more time, okay.
Yep, that'd be great. You'll see in your screen an area to register for our upcoming June 16th Open Line program, which is entitled What It Takes to Be an Employer of Choice Domestically and Globally. This is going to be a panel discussion with some amazing experts. So sign up today, reserve a space for yourself, and let us know if you'd like your staff or other colleagues or association members to attend. In the next few days, you'll receive a recording and PowerPoint for today's program. Please feel free to share it with others in your organization or within your association. Malone and I want to thank you so much for attending today, and we look forward to having you attend our next program. Let me turn the recording off, because a lot of people don't like to have their voice on a recording, and we'll be right back in just about 10-15 seconds.